This episode of the Walk On Mentality podcast is brought to you by Goodwill Provisions. Are you ready to take your health and wellness journey to the next level? If so, look no further than Goodwill Provisions, your partner in holistic, athletic nutrition. Goodwill believes that true well-being encompasses more than just physical fitness. It's about nurturing your mind, body, and soul to achieve peak human performance. Their provisions range from the mushroom-powered Dawn Patrol superfoods, which go perfect in your morning coffee or post-workout smoothie, to whey protein, creatine, and even CoQ10 to help you stay focused and energized throughout the day. As part of the Walk On Mentality community, you get an exclusive perk. Head over to goodwillprovisions.com to explore their offerings and treat yourself to a healthier journey. Use code MENTALITY at checkout and you'll unlock a fantastic 15% off your order. Thanks for supporting the podcast, and I can't wait to hear what you think about the supplements. Remember, no limits. Are you tired of feeling like your clothes are too tight, uncomfortable, or never your size? What about feeling like you never have the right apparel for the various occasions that you're doing on a month-to-month basis? At the end of the day, you look good, you feel good, and you feel good, you play good. And that's in every area of your life. And if that resonates with you, look no further. I'd like to introduce you to the Roan Commuter Collection. Roan's Commuter Collection is flexible and breathable. There's a product for every occasion. Mobility is everything, and it makes looking good easy. Not to mention, with Gold Fusion anti-odor technology, you never have to worry about your pits reeking. If any of that resonated with you, then my friend, you are in the right place. The Commuter Collection can get you through any workday and straight into whatever comes next. So head to roan.com/mentality and use promo code MENTALITY to save 20% off your entire order. That's 20% off your entire order when you head to rhone.com/mentality and use code MENTALITY. It's time to find your office comfort. If you're like me, you like to train hard. And if you train hard, it's incredibly important that you take the time to prioritize rest and recovery so that you can come back better. And one of the ways I set myself up to come back better is by rocking the Kane Revive. The Kane Revive is designed to stimulate recovery from the ground up, created for moments of athletic transition, made to support and renew the feet before and after workouts. Kane is made with Bounce Back Foam, a breakthrough biofoam created from sustainable Brazilian sugar cane. The shoes are odor and bacteria resistant, quick drying, and ultra durable. They were developed in partnership with Dr. Daniel Geller, an authority in the treatment of foot and ankle injuries in elite runners, cyclists, and triathletes. Head to the link in the show notes to support the Walk On Mentality podcast and get yourself a pair. Come back better. What's up, everybody? This is your host, Jackson Mitchell, and we are back with another episode of the Walk On Mentality podcast. This week in the studio, I have the pleasure of sitting down from Mr. Dustin Berdazel. Dustin, appreciate you joining me.
Dude, it's a pleasure. I am hugely grateful to you taking the time, and you know, when I reached out to you and trying to find a little pathway to share my story, you being really gracious, it means the world to me, man. I'm pumped to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's funny. I was actually looking at that email last night and thinking to myself, like, obviously I know that you're a sales guy, but it's like, this is the way to do it. It's like you said, a little bit about your walk-on journey, you know, where you think your story can impact my audience, and, you know, some other things as well. But I was just like, man, this does seem like an awesome fit, and I'm really excited to have you here and looking forward to diving into, you know, all the different parts of your journey, because I think there's just a ton of value there. So,
well, I hope so. I think, you know, I've had a crazy last 6 years of my life, and that's what culminated in me deciding to write a book. Is I think that everybody hopes that they live a life that enriches other people and those around them. And I know enough about myself to know, like, I've got a few talents. One of them is writing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you alluded to it with the email. Like, that's a good outlet for me.
Right.
And so, you know, the thing about a book, though, is, like, if you don't have a huge advertising budget and you're trying to share a story, like, you got to talk about it. You have to let people know what you're about. And so reaching out and trying to expand that reach a little bit. And if it is what I think it is, then I hope it'll have a really positive impact on people.
Yeah. And I'd be curious to know a couple things. One,
when did you realize that you had a gift in writing? You know, we briefly touched on faith in our initial conversation, but you know, when did you realize, like, huh, this is a gift of mine? And then the second part of that question is, you know, what does success or impact specifically with that book look like to you? Is it if one person picks it up and reads it and is like, man, like, this changed my life, I'm going to run a marathon, or this changed my life, I'm going to become sober, or, you know, whatever it is, like, what does that look like to you?
No, that's a great question, because that is the wager you are placing when you decided to take on a project that big. Is the juice worth the squeeze? Right?
Right.
So the answer to the first question, when did I think I had a talent in writing? Probably like second grade. I remember specifically writing a essay for my mom. She wanted me to write a book report, and she wanted it to be 1,000 words.
Okay.
Which, that is a massive undertaking for a second grade child.
Yes, I can hardly write that now.
And I was sports obsessed. I read the Reggie White's autobiography, The Minister of Defense, and I wrote a massive paper on it. I don't remember if it was any good, but I'm like, I'm getting out of thesaurus, manually looking up like how to put in better words.
As a second grader.
It's a second grader.
Impressive.
And my mom was super encouraging about it. Now, was it actually good? I don't know, but it gave me a confidence that when I was older and getting into school, I always took the writing seriously, and feedback was always very strong. And somewhere along the line, as I started getting more into literature and reading serious writers, and look, this is kind of how it worked as a basketball player too. You get around real dudes, and you start to realize, like, I can hang. Mm-hmm. And I could recognize that in the writing. So then, you know, what has happened in my life recently, like, you know, you lose your talents when you lose focus of yourself. And that was largely my 20s, right?
Mm-hmm.
If people ask me where my story starts, it's like, well, I was 32, which is way too old for your story to start. That's a lot of squandered time. But once I got serious again and I realized, like, I had something to say, it came out really easily for me. So, you know, we'll writing is a lifelong endeavor, and we'll wait to see, you know, what my final legacy is on that. I hope I have a lot more books in me.
Yeah.
But the second part of the question, which is what's success look like? I have a chapter in the book, and the subtitle of it is The Goal is Success.
Mm-hmm.
Success is only ever one thing, and that's peace of mind. It is the same for every person, and peace of mind is it's a tension you have to work with. It's a grappling with you in your life.
Right.
You know, you want to set goals, but not something that's going to crush you. You want to achieve, but not so easily that it feels like nothing. And so if you set that correctly, you can achieve peace of mind for yourself. So when it comes to the book and what peace of mind looks like, peace of mind was completing something that I knew was good.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I wanted to know that I could finish it and it be professional. And every inch of this book, the graphic design, the editing, like, I had one person who helped me fine-tooth comb the editing at the end. But beyond that, it's all me. And I know that I'm proud of it.
Yeah.
And so for me, that was peace of mind, because the reason I write in the first place, and thank you for giving me a lot of room with these questions. Big answers here.
Yeah, dude, of course. Like, take your time.
The reason I write in the first place is when my life spiraled out of control at one point, you know, your brain, this is kind of like about therapy too.
Mm-hmm.
Your brain feels like it is a storm of interests and emotions. And for me personally, I'm lucky to have a wide array of curiosities. I love life. I find it fascinating. Yes. I can get into almost anything. I tell people I haven't been bored in 6 years. And I think that's true.
Yeah.
Like, I just think everything is interesting.
What a beautiful perspective, because not everybody has that perspective.
Well, you know, it's like, what's the phrase, like, the only bored people are boring people, or something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, and I don't want that. I want to find the zest for life.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was trying to, like, piece myself back together, I don't know the science on this, but they say we think at a rate of about 1,000 words per minute,
mm-hmm.
whatever that means. It just means your brain moves a little bit faster than you can convey.
Right.
Now, when we speak, most of us speak around 100, 120 words per minute. I'm a little slower.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. When I write, even when I'm humming and I'm just like, things are flying, that slows down to about 20 words per minute.
Really?
Writing is about the most intentional and just most elevated way I can think. It gets me precise.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's like, how do I improve my thinking? And so everybody has an outlet that they use for, you know, their own betterment.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, writing is the best tool I have to maximize my human potential.
I love that.
And so if I can write a good book on a topic, success.
Yeah.
Now, because I'm proud of it, I want other people to engage with it. I want them to experience it because I want it to enrich them the way it has enriched me. And it'll land with some people, it won't with others. And I don't have like a sales number that would make me happy.
Mm-hmm.
I've created an artificial goal in my mind of 100 Amazon reviews.
Yeah.
Like that is enough of like a data pool that in my next writing endeavor, I can point to it and say, this is the caliber of product you're getting here.
Yeah.
It is worth investing in the next story I have to tell.
Right.
So that's the scope I'm aiming at.
Yeah, it's interesting. One thing that came to my mind as you were giving that answer is, you know, this certain level of intention that writing requires and that you experience when you're writing it, it almost feels like writing is an activity that requires you to be so present in the moment, and it gives you the opportunity to actually slow down in a world where the reality is like there's so much going on all the time that it's really easy to not ever slow down. And I think if I remember correctly, we maybe talked about that too regarding running, how like when you're mm-hmm. running, it requires present moment focus, you know, you're focused on the next step. And like, in a way, there's some similarities between writing and running, which for me personally, I've found to be a lot of similarities between running and like almost every area of my life. And I'm sure you have as well. But I want to hear more about, you know, you said this zest for life. You have this zest for life. And one thing that I know about you is at a certain point in time, the zest was kind of gone. And then when you were revitalized, the zest was anew, but the zest also led you kind of down a path that you didn't want to ultimately be on.
Yeah.
And you mentioned also having kind of squandered 20 years of your life. Now, I will tell you, man, it's never too late to start living.
Mm-hmm.
While of course it's easy to reflect and think like, man, like, you know, lost time. It's like, yeah, but also like, look at you now. Like,
when's the best father, time to plant a tree?
Right.
Right.
20 years ago.
Right? Yeah.
Father, you know, successful businessman, successful author, because the measure of success was, I want to write a good book, and you've done that. So like, things are phenomenal, but it's been a journey and a ride. And I tell people all the time that like, life is simple but not easy, and it requires like every day us showing up and putting forth the effort to like create this life that we want. And the path looks different for everybody. Your path looks different than mine, but like here we sit, and knowing what I know about you, like you've created a pretty awesome life. But I would love to rewind the clock and hear more about, you know, these squandered years, so yeah. to speak. You know, yeah. walk on it at, you know, your college in Kansas. I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like I said, I tell people it starts at 32.
Yeah.
And like, obviously, yeah, there are all those squandered years. So I will rewind to there. it's not all squandered because, like, my first 18, I mean, award-winning first 18.
State champ.
Oh, yeah, state championship in football, which, like, let me tell you, that a million dudes a year play high school football, right?
Yeah.
And for a lot of those guys, it is the peak of their athletic experience. And football is a unique sport in just, like, its physical taxation on you. It, you know, there's other sports, I imagine, like wrestling, that are just as physically difficult. Mm-hmm. But, like, that play-by-play confrontation with your own courage is something that's unique. It's like, and to come out the other side of it with, like, we had a field and we were the best in it. Mm-hmm. Like, some people go their whole lives without, like, having that experience. And yeah. So, like, those first 18 years, like, I had incredible parents, just, like, an amazing set of friends, and I think just a great childhood situation. So, you know, I was given a lot of fortuitous foundation.
Yeah.
The thing that I think is true of almost everybody's life is, you know, imagine you're a boat on the water. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning of your life, you just kind of go where the current takes you.
Yep.
You know, you don't have any direction, you don't row, you don't. And then at some point in life, you wake up to the fact that, like, you're probably somewhere you're not 100% pleased with. Maybe you're a little out of shape, maybe you've fallen into an addiction. For me, I always loved basketball the most.
I want to stop you for a second.
Okay.
Do you think that this floating with the current, is it a result of not realizing that you, in fact, are the captain of that ship and have the ability to steer that ship in a way that is actually aligned with, you know, what you feel like you're called to do or your purpose or what you're interested in? I feel like, you know, just thinking of my own journey, like, I certainly was just, you know, feet up on the deck, chilling, like, riding the current, and certainly ended up in a place where I was like, this can't be it.
Yeah.
But once I realized, no, like, I'm got the hat on doing mm-hmm. the thing, like, my life completely changed. Do you feel like that is a universal thing as well, to a degree? Maybe not universal, but a lot of people experience it.
Yeah. To your point, like, there's always outliers, but it's like 90+%.
Yeah.
And it's the way our society is structured, right? It's like, we praise individualism and the person's ability to forge their own path, but any person who has forged their own path, I mean, heck, I was just talking to about the guys who have the studio here. It's mm-hmm. like, once you forge your own path, you lay out pathways for other people. And they start walking those paths, and they didn't have to forge it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, like most people, I went to school. I took the tests they told me to take. I went to college because that's what people do. And it's like, you're getting these little gold stars all along the way for just, like, doing what you're told.
Right.
And, you know, the big realization for me about, I guess, everything is that it's my life and what I choose to do with it. Similar to the book, What's Success? Peace of Mind. Like, what I choose to do with it and, like, how I achieve those choices. It makes all the difference in the world, as whether this was, like, a life that just happened to me or a life well lived.
Mm.
And to stay on this topic, my favorite running book of all time is What I Talk About When I Talk About Running by Haruki Murakami.
Okay.
Brilliant Japanese novelist who also just happens to, like, run two marathons a year. And he cites this article that has a very common phrase, which is, pain is unavoidable, suffering is optional.
Mm.
Or, like, pain is necessary, suffering is optional.
Mm-hmm.
And
I like that.
The thing I always thought about that phrase initially was, like, oh, well, the mindset is, like, this isn't suffering. Like, it's just about tweaking it.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually think it's the opposite. The choice is to voluntarily suffer
mm-hmm.
because that means, like, you have become the captain of your ship. The floating boat analogy, the reason I like that is almost everybody, when they come to a point where they realize, like, I am adrift. like I'm just out here. Like, the, you know, you look at your, like, maybe your doughy midsection, or you find yourself, like for me, you find yourself in a jail cell, mm-hmm. like from a DUI, like, and you're like, I am not supposed to be here. Like, this is not where I belong. And the instinct is to start, like, get out the oars and row like hell.
Right.
Like, I am going to direct where this boat goes. Now, inevitably, what people will find is that is exhausting and it will burn you out.
Right.
And the truth of life is that you can't get rid of the waves, you can't get rid of the wind. And what you need to do is learn to be a sailor.
Mm-hmm.
Take advantage of the randomness, the chance in life by harnessing the opportunities as they arise, and create opportunities yourself by, when there is dead time, rowing like hell to a better situation, so that when the wind picks up again, you can get where you want to be.
Mm.
So I think that's those three stages. You go from drifting to rowing to, like, having an actual skill around the way you navigate this thing called life. And I think the very best skill you can develop, and this is what running teaches you, is the suffering is optional. Choose it.
Mm.
Lean into it. And if you can lean into that intentional adversity, when the hard time comes, like, I'm built for this.
Mm.
You're ready for it. There's a John Wooden quote, things tend to work out best for those who make the best of how things work out. And that's it. High school football coach used to say, you're going to face some prosperity and you're going to face some adversity. And how you handle the adversity is what's going to define you as a man.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I spent 10 years drifting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, dyed in the wool alcoholic, man. I'm drinking every single night.
And that's 22 to 32?
Yeah. I mean, if we're being accurate, it's like 18 to 32. Yeah, but, yeah. You know.
Yeah, close
enough. Those first 4 years, it was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, college kid. Then, and because I'm intellectually adept, I'm a good learner. I have some social skill about me. I'm able to navigate all that, keep life on the rails, and actually kind of, like, keep taking strides. I mean,
right.
I got a job at Cisco, which is an incredible company to work for, mm-hmm. and it really changed my life. I'm so grateful to have it.
Yeah.
And I met my wife. A lot of good things came during that time. But, you know, a lot of heartbreak, too. I mean, share a quick story. This is what I consider, and since we're building some, like, narrative plot arc here, this is the nadir for me. This is the rock bottom.
Yeah.
And I didn't cite it as my rock bottom until I, like, bottomed out again years later. But, I'm doing a 10-day jail stay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 24. I think it's my second DUI, maybe. And the judge was like, look, you got to figure this out. You're young.
Right.
So I'm going to give you a little bit of punishment. And they worked with me. I scheduled vacation at work. They scheduled my jail time.
Wow.
And which I'm grateful for, right? Like,
yeah.
So I...
Did you tell, like, you had to have told, like, management?
No.
All right, well.
Lied about the whole thing. Which, look, I don't ethically endorse. I should have raised my hand and said I had a problem way sooner. But
yeah.
I'm suppressing it all. I don't know what I need. I'm trying to hang on to the addiction.
Right.
Wow. And so I do it over a Thanksgiving break. The tricky part is I'm working in Raleigh, North Carolina. I got my DUI in Kansas. I have to fly to Kansas to go to jail.
Okay.
Which is just like, what a vacation.
Book a flight to go to jail. It's something.
Hey, it's a unique, in hindsight, it's an interesting experience.
Yeah.
So my mom drives me to the jail. They check me in. World's worst hotel. I get into, like, my suit, I get into my little pod with the guys, and we're there for a while. We've got 6 days later, they put us all in a bus, they drive us to the courthouse, and the courthouse has holding cells in the basement, so they unload us all, we're in our chains. I walk up this super long hallway with a bailiff, and they take me into the courtroom. It's just a judge, a bailiff, the place is completely empty. Mm-hmm. And he's going to sentence me. And so I sit down there. There is absolutely nobody there except my parents sitting in the back row.
Yeah.
And to have your parents who love you so unconditionally, and I'm more emotional now having kids and knowing what that relationship is,
mm-hmm.
Seeing me, and it's like the classic stripes, you know?
Yeah.
And like I'm,
like something out of a movie.
Yeah, and I'm cuffed up. It's a terrible image in my life. It felt awful. And, you know, I don't kick the habit. I try to make changes to my life. I try to, like, measure my approaches to drinking, and it's not until after a leukemia diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
And I'm home from work for 10 months going through chemo and drinking, and I get in a car accident
that under then, the influence.
Yep. That then it's like, okay, like, this is it. It's the last straw. And again, I luck out because like Carolina and Kansas weren't talking to each other. So my history kind of gets overlooked.
Wow. Yeah.
And you know, I don't know what to make of that. I don't know if I'm, you know, on one level, like, you know, there's people who go their whole life and they don't get popped. I'm getting popped multiple times, but on another level, like I didn't hurt anybody, like nobody died,
right?
And I kind of got off easier than I should.
Yeah.
And so that's when I checked into rehab. My wife at that point, I don't even think we were married a year, like what'd she sign up for?
Yeah.
But she was unbelievable through the whole thing. She came and read the most devastating letter I've ever heard in my life, talking about all the times I've ever heard her under the influence. And then, like, impossibly at the end of it, I love you so much. And it was that, in that time in rehab, which let me pause and say to anybody, if you have an obvious thing in your life holding you back, the ability to take 30 days and focus on nothing but the problem and get people who understand the problem, get some coaches around you that can help you, like, pull the threads apart of what you're dealing with, that is an incredible gift to yourself that will pay off for the rest of your life. And do that. Prioritize it over everything. Those 30 days turned things around for me. It gave me the tools I needed to begin rebuilding. And that's also when I started running. They started letting I just felt stir crazy in the house, so they would let me out to run on the beach in the morning, and I'd come back to the rehab center and do a day full of therapy. And you know, I'm about a week from leaving, and my wife calls me, and you know, she thought she might have been pregnant, but now she calls me because she believes she's miscarried. 95% sure. And it's like, okay, well, this sucks. It's just awful. But then the day she picks me up from rehab, 5 days later, she had gone to the gynecologist that morning, and I get in the car, and she shows me a strip of sonogram photos, and that is the first time I ever saw my son. And whether you think that's providence or coincidence, if you can't take that, like, put literalism aside, if you can't look at that as a sign for, like, hey, the adversity has happened.
Yeah.
And how you respond to this is what's going to define you as a man. You know, I hear my old coach say in the words, is like, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since that time, my life has been a 1,000,000% better.
Well, what's your go-to quote? They say a man has two lives, or
yeah, Confucius.
Confucius.
Every man has two lives, and the second one begins when he realizes he has only one. And that was it for me, man.
Yeah,
that was the moment.
Quick question: what did you tell your colleagues when you came back from vacation?
Well, this is funny. Yeah. Everybody thought I had had like some flare up with the cancer.
Okay.
And I let them think it.
Just went with it.
We didn't get too into it. People who were close to me, I told them the story initially.
Okay. So but, just so I make sure I'm tracking.
Mm-hmm.
24 was DUI, 10-day jail sentence.
Yep.
That was also the time that you got your cancer diagnosis?
So I...
to that?
Or no. That was several years so later? We go 6 years later.
So that's and what I was
when I talk about the squandered separate. Life.
Okay. So cancer diagnosis came at...
31.
31. Okay, so DUI, 10-year stint in jail. You attempt to create some sort of good relationship with what you know is something that you simply can't have a good relationship yep. with. And, you know, from everyone who I know who has gone to rehab for some stint, the feedback seems relatively consistent that, like, it's a hard no. It's mm-hmm. like this is needs to be gone. Maybe I just haven't met the person that has gone to rehab and gotten away from it and then, you know, created some sort of relationship where they sure. can't have it. But point being, like, most of what I know says eliminate and every day eliminate. And I don't know if you've read Rich Roll's book, but
Finding Ultra.
Yeah. I mean, I just am finishing it up. And like, I'm kind of at the tail end where he's giving his like advice. And last night I read, like, you know, if you have an addiction, whether it be drugs, alcohol, exercise, sexting, you know, long list of things, because addiction looks different for everybody. Mm-hmm. And even the stuff that's not inherently bad can still be a problem if you let it like rule your life to a degree.
No question.
But so, man, I just, 6 years pass, you get into a wreck under the influence, no real consequences. All I could think of as you were telling this story is like, and it's really interesting that you said what you just said about like coincidence or providence, but it's like, man, nothing's a coincidence.
Yeah.
And like,
well, be clear, I lean on providence.
Yeah, yeah. Like, nothing is coincidental. Like, this is all, there's a reason why you're not locked up for however long. There's a reason why, you know, in my mind, like, all I can think of is God's grace. Like, mm-hmm. your wife standing by you and, like, the grace that she's shown you is just, like, an emulation of God's grace in my mind. And so, like, what a powerful demonstration of that. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that there's a thing. Look, whether you believe in God or not, and, you know, I've had a complicated relationship with Christianity and my faith. But I wholeheartedly believe in the lessons that the Bible is trying to tell us about mercy and salvation and why we need it here in this, like, this physical shell we inhabit.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that we're all the same thing. We're all created in the same image. We all have, you know, we vary in degree, but not in kind.
Mm.
And everybody has something that they struggle with, something that they wish they could, like, if they could just exorcise this one thing, or if they could just harness this one talent. And their inability to do so starts to create guilt, and if it flares excessively, it will create shame.
Mm.
And if you've ever been through that, then you know how powerful it is to have somebody who believes in you. And I don't think there is anything you can give to another person that is more powerful than just a rock-steady belief. I manage a team at Cisco, and I only really have two principles for team management. Across whether you're a coach, whether you manage a sales team, whatever. You're going to create a lot of rules about processes and, like, irrelevant, immaterial. The thing that matters, and this is a Brené Brown thing, love number it. One, you have to believe that people are trying their best. And if you don't believe that, if you think that they're just lazy, then, like, what is your purpose as a leader? What are you providing them?
Mm.
Like, if you believe they're trying their best, you have something to work with. You can help them remove the obstacles, and some of those are obstacles that lie in their own heart. But, like, the answer is always to believe, and from that place you can help solve. And, you know, the second aspect of that, and this is just, I guess, maybe even a subset, is that feelings are valid. You can't tell people, like, hey, put that in a box. Their feeling highlights a problem either in the system or in the communication, and taking time to focus on that feeling and solve it is key to, like, the longevity of the relationship and, you know, the productivity of whatever thing you're trying to achieve. And that is true for the individual as well. And all I'm really talking about there is, to your point, is grace and mercy. And, you know, there's slight variations in that, but it's like, how do we look at the things that are preventing people from being the best versions of themselves and help them remove those? And, like, for me, the tools are writing, running, and relationships. You know, there's one thing for my body, one thing for my mind, and one thing for my soul.
Love it.
And, like, with that, it's the same thing I teach my kids. Strong, smart, kind. Make it more simple for them, right? Like, these are the only things you need to focus on.
Right.
And all the rest is detail.
Yeah.
So I think anybody you interact with, and, like, honestly, this is one of the things I love most about the walk-on mentality, is it begins from a place of believing that you are more. That, hey, maybe you are just, I was trying to, like, what does it actually mean to be a walk-on? Because I was a walk-on.
Right.
College basketball. And it just means that there's a group of people over here that they believe in a little bit more than you. And then there's you who has to believe in yourself until everybody else, like, finds it.
Right.
And I think that creating a community around that, say, like, no, I'll believe in you first. Like, that's what forgiveness is. It is giving before anything is owed. And I think that that's an incredibly powerful thing. So
thank you.
So, yeah, I guess that's what initially drew me. Like, now that you've heard, like, a little bit more of my story, like, and all that soup I'm dealing with, I come across, like, you and the message that you put out into the world, and it's like, yeah, yeah, this is my guy.
I'm
follow. I'm in.
So, yeah, man.
So I think that it's all there, and my wife has been an incredible model for that. And when I write this book, I try to reach out to the reader, but even the people who don't read it, it's like, well, this gives me like a physical manifestation of the relationship I want to give to people. There's a, in the last chapter of the book, I say last chapter, but then I do acknowledgments and a reference and an epilogue. So like, somebody shut me up.
Yeah.
But the very last chapter, after you hear how the marathon that is the focus of the book goes, and like, okay, well, what did we learn at the finish line? You know, I think that if anybody came to me seriously about wanting to improve their life, it's like, I'm not an expert in everything, but, you know, as you've heard, I've got a lot of experience in feeling bad and feeling better.
Yeah.
Whether that's cancer physically, whether that is addiction mentally, or whether that's a loss of faith, you know, which is that real battle of the soul. I feel like I have come back from all that. I've learned to navigate the seas, harness the wind. And the first thing I would do if somebody really came to me is I would try to smile warmly, let them know, safe space.
Safe.
And then I'd buy them a pair of Nikes and say, let's get you back on your feet.
Yeah.
Because getting onto the road and building some strength, building some self-belief that, like, I can see myself get better incrementally. The body's feedback loop is incredibly quick, and the body is an incredible teacher of the relationship we need to have with ourselves. Like, I don't think my body is me. That's something cancer gave me. It's like, I am a person who has a body. And the way I think about my body now, it's like my relationship with my dog. Oh, I love this thing. I work for it. It works for me. I got to take it out on a walk. I got to feed it right.
Right.
And when I do that, like, I feel a sense of peace because the original gift I was given, which is life in this body, I am caring for it well. Man with the talents.
Yeah.
You know?
Man, it's so interesting how it takes different people, different experiences to gain that perspective. Like, for myself specifically, I had a really bad relationship with food, a really bad relationship with exercise, where, like, almost an addictive relationship with exercise for a period of time, where it wasn't like, this is a gift, but like, I'm doing this because I have to be able to physically perform at a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
But I've found that, like, having the awareness around that and then shifting it from like, no, I do need to take care of this vessel, and like, rest is necessary, and I need to fuel properly to be able to do these amazing things that we're capable of doing, right? Like, we were just talking about beforehand, like, your first marathon, you tried to, you know, fuel from a hydration standpoint with only water, and it's like, that's not gonna work.
Yeah.
But it's so easy to neglect like those things. And yeah, I really appreciate like that mindset of like, no, like, this is like my dog. Like, yeah. let me go move, like, let me fuel appropriately, whatever.
Well, you want to be a good steward.
Yeah.
It's like, here's the thing I was given. Like, am I treating it right?
Right.
And independent of what anybody says, like, this, I guess this will be the one like slightly risque thing I said here.
Bring it.
Independent of what anybody says, they want to feel strong. They want to know that they have taken care of their body.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is a universal feeling to, like, know that this thing that they have, that they've taken good care of it. And that'll look different for everybody.
Right.
We come in all shapes and sizes. But I have struggled with my own weight. I've been, like, right now I'm sitting here at about 210, 215.
Mm-hmm.
I've weighed as much as 270.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, gosh, you look at my... you can look at some pictures, but, like, got the big moon face going, you know?
Yeah.
And I just think that taking that initial step to, well, I've got this one taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are people on the flip side. It's like, to your point, like, an unhealthy relationship with the exercise and the fitness. Like,
right.
That's a slightly different thing to battle. You know, some things with body dysmorphia. And,
right.
But it comes from a similar place, which is like, okay, I did not take proper intention about how I'm managing the substance here.
Right.
So you almost always need an exercise portion in like the structure of a life.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I like running specifically is if you're just talking about navigation, and when you said it's like, well, I could relate it to almost anything in life, the initial thing you learn is to like, from A to B. Like, yeah. I make a joke when people are like, when did you get into running? I was like, well, I kind of mastered walking at one, and then it just grew from there.
Yeah.
But it's like, that's the initial thing. Like, this is what you were made to do.
Right.
And I find little comforts in like, oh, I got to jog across the parking lot because like my wife's ready to roll. And it's easy.
Right.
It's like, look at me doing this.
Right.
And so I think that when you master the basics, it teaches you all you need to do about the more advanced stuff. And that's a little bit easier to make like the mental and emotional leap than something with a barbell, or, which I still do. I have a full home gym.
Right.
Anybody who gets into running is going to get into lifting.
Mm-hmm.
You know how important you that becomes.
To. Yeah.
But yeah. And I think that's why I focused on a running book. It's like,
yeah.
Let's start the here, starting guys. Point. Let's start here.
So kind of on that same topic, like, you are in rehab, running is the only kind of escape you get from that. I don't even want to call it escape, but
that's how maybe it is.
Yeah. So it's the only escape you get from the work that's being done, which it, undoubtedly from what I've heard again, is like hard work. And so you start there, you get out. You've got, you know, the leukemia diagnosis. When did you decide, like, I'm going to run a marathon? And,
that's a great question.
You know, how did you navigate cancer and the treatment involved with that with getting into this new habit, you know, you created a new habit for yourself. Talk about that transition and what that looked like.
Yeah, I think, look, the obvious answer is that we feel things before we know them. That's true for almost anything. You have a sense. And I had always disliked running, which is just the most common theme in like every runner's story.
Yeah. It was punishment before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I, that suffering is optional idea, which no one had given me the words yet, but I knew that I was not tough enough to be the person I wanted to be. And toughness for me, like, I don't like to be all like macho and like the kind of the old bravado around it.
Yeah.
But you know, there's a thing to being like the toughest kid in school. There's a confidence that like when things get hard, I'm able to do it. And the idea of a marathon sounded impossible.
Right.
And it's funny now, like, you know, you read enough books like Finding Ultra, right? And it's like, oh, 26.2, a nice casual weekend. And I don't feel that way. A marathon is still just like drag my soul out of me to get one done. But it seemed like a state championship of the soul.
Right.
If I can do this, I will have proved to myself that I can do what needs to be done, that I can do hard things. And that phrase is, I'm glad that phrase is kind of like come in vogue, do hard things, because if you can do one hard thing, like Joe Rogan says this all the time, like, you know, what is it? It's like that Book of Five Rings thing. It's like,
I don't know if I know it.
It's know the way broadly and you will see it in all things. Something to that effect. But that's what doing the marathon was. It's like, if I can figure this out. And I just started running. I had no knowledge whatsoever. I just ran, and I was like, well, I'll just run a little bit further every time. My very first day I went out, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll run a 5K, fast as I can run it. I'm just going to haul ass on this thing. average pace, like 9:45 a mile.
Yeah.
And I'm just like,
gassed.
Oh, I'm dead. I was sore for days.
Right.
And so, like, I just slowly built, and eventually, like, I'm dying. I'm cramping up and just, like, dragging myself into work at the end of, like, 17-mile runs before the race is coming. And I know. Yeah. I know it is going to be bad.
Right.
I raised a bunch of money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, and that bought me a ticket in the Chicago Marathon. And what an amazing first marathon experience.
Yeah.
It's, like, the biggest marathon in the world. It's incredible. And so that atmosphere, it also just hooked me. Like, it was incredible. Loved it. And my body starts breaking down around mile 18. I suffer through 8 more miles. Like, I'm gonna finish. I've run the thing in like 4:25, whatever my time was. And I mean, before they got the medal around my neck, I was pulling my phone out of my belt and texting my wife, worth it.
Yeah.
I could tell instantly. Like, I did this, and I knew by doing it, like, I had achieved that peace of mind goal. Like, can I? I can.
Yeah.
And having something difficult like that after 15 years of just floating, it was a revelation that I am who I thought I could be. And everything else has flowed from that. Nothing intimidates me anymore. That's probably a lie, right? but it's like, you know, I've met a C-level person in our company recently, which, like, C-level people in our company make like $20 million.
Right.
It's like, this is a person.
Right.
And in the past, I would have been like shaky.
Right.
And it was just a person. Just a person. I don't see any difference between them and me. And amazingly, that's true on the flip side, too. Like, I live in a downtown area. Like, I'll walk past homeless guys on the street. If anybody ever asks me for money, I will give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
So don't take advantage of that.
Let's talk after this.
Yeah. But it's just, I don't see any difference between me and that guy either.
Yeah.
Because I have passed out on a street before.
Right.
So it's all this spectrum of life and being able to, because I've been at the bottom, being able to achieve for me something near the top, I was like, okay, it's all open for me now.
Mm-hmm.
It's all open for me. So yeah, running gave me that. And I think it can give it to a lot of people, because for the majority of people, for 90% of the demo, that running a marathon will feel like I achieved the impossible. Because most people, they think it is.
I think it's like 1%.
1% runs one. Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, and then it's only like a quarter of that 1% run a second one.
Yeah. And it's no small feat.
No.
But it's like I think it's just like fear around anything else. Like, it's always so much worse in your head than when you just go for it.
Yeah.
And whether that's like having a conversation with somebody, an uncomfortable conversation, or running 1 mile even, or half a mile, like, you know, you make this thing in your mind just the unimaginable to accomplish.
I've seen you log in some long miles. Have you run a 26.2 before?
I have run one.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got my second coming up in January.
January.
Yeah.
Where at?
Houston.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I've heard that's good.
I'm really excited. I ran Dallas last year, Rolling Hills, learned a ton. I mean, I think...
Oh, the first one's an education.
Man, you know, again, just like thinking about marathon relative to life, running relative to life, like, I don't think there's anything else that allows you to really track progress and see what, you know, what you do and how it impacts your performance. Like, running just does that for me. Like, it's so easy for me to see growth. It's so easy for me to figure out, okay, well, what's working and what's not, and then let me adapt my strategy accordingly. It's like, I run that race last year. It's a phenomenal experience, but I'm also in the porta potty for like 30 minutes. So like, figuring out, okay, well, what do I need to do differently this time around? And also, for me, like, you know, the walk-on mentality being what it is, being this, you know, brand that's built on the foundation of like removing self-imposed limitations from our lives, mm-hmm. and like pushing to tap into that next level of like, what can I do if I go for it? Like, running is that for me. It's like, I remember, you know, I played linebacker in college, yeah. was 240 pounds, you know, on like a 6'1" frame, yeah. and when I started,
like a tank.
Yeah. And when I started running, I was like, oh, like, I'm not going to run more than 2 miles ever. But then you run three and you're like, well, wait, if I can run three, like, maybe I can run four.
Yep.
If I can run four, maybe I can run six. And you build on that. And like, a big milestone lately was like the weekly mileage milestone, where I was like, wow, if you would have told me I would be running like over 60 miles a week at any point in my life, I would have told you you're out of your mind. But like, why would I tell you that? Like, because I was limiting myself.
Yep.
And I think that, you know, I believe that we should all remove those self-imposed limitations, because when you do that, like, sure, maybe you don't get your goal on the first time around,
mm-hmm.
but when you don't put a limit to what you think is possible for you, I think there's a high likelihood that you'll achieve more. And not that life is all about achievement, but I want for myself, and I want for the people who interact with me, to feel like, man, why not me? Like, why can't I do it?
Well, I'll say this about achievement. We all decide our own goals.
Mm-hmm.
It's a self, to your point, your limitations are self-imposed, but also your expectations are self-imposed.
Right.
And a goal, I think most people misunderstand it. They think it's like, they think it's an achievement.
Right.
A goal is a relationship you build with yourself. It is saying, I think I can be this person.
Mm-hmm.
And you create this idea of this future version of yourself, somebody who's capable of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you solve the path to becoming them,
mm-hmm.
on your way to it. The reason I named the book The Amateur's Companion to Becoming a Marathoner is life is all about amateurism.
Yeah.
I've never been a dad before. I never ran a marathon. when did I write my first book?
Right.
It is a series of challenges that you didn't see coming, that you learned to master. And in doing so, you know, my big thing is like I want to live a life, and this is common, right? But I want to live a life of no regrets, and that doesn't mean like doing it all. It means I know that I, in the time I had, I was present, I did my best. Well, let me frame it this way, because I have thought a lot about this. There's three questions that lead to a life of no regrets, and that's: did I try my best? Did I make wise decisions? Did I treat other people well? And again, we're in that three-prong thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a strength factor, there is a intelligence factor, wisdom. And intelligence is just the ability to solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing more, nothing less. And then there is a relational, like, what kind of heart do I have factor?
Mm-hmm.
And if you do all those three things, as somebody who has literally laid on a deathbed, like, it was right there. I was hanging in the balance, hopped up on every drug as they tried to solve me.
Mm-hmm.
I put a lot of stock into how I'm going to feel in those final seconds. Am I going to be panicked or frustrated, or am I going to have that peace of mind I've worked so hard to cultivate?
Right.
And so I try to build from that, and I don't think I could have understood that without taking the very first step, which ended up becoming a lot of steps,
yeah,
that turns into what, and for some people that might be a 10K.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And then once you've done the 10K, to your point, oh, well, I could run 15.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And once you've done that and you've realized it's just about time and effort, and give yourself enough time and focus and you become invincible.
Right. And I really like the title of the book, specifically the Amateur's Companion piece, because I think one thing that I've found myself thinking about a lot lately is the fact that, like, nobody has all the answers. Nobody,
yeah, I'm not a guide.
Yeah. Like, nobody has it all figured out. Nobody. Like, for me on my journey, I don't know what it's going to look like 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. You don't know what your life's going to look like 10 years from now. Like, all we can do is make the absolute most of this very moment and make our decisions based on, you know, that knowing what that future vision you want.
Mm-hmm.
But what can I do right now to continue me on the path that I'm on and want to be on? I feel like for a period of time in my life, I felt like I had to have it all mapped, figured out, and control everything, but yeah, it's like, no, like, just surrender that necessity to control everything. Mm-hmm. And I can't really verbalize it in a way that is super compelling, but everything will make sense.
Yeah, it's a jazz mindset. I think what you'll find, so my best friend since high school, dude's a remarkable guy. He just picked up running this year when I gave him an advanced copy of the book.
Yeah.
And it's the same deal. Hated running. Punishment. And he just, like, a month ago ran his first marathon, like, 3:26.
Savage.
I was like, dude, how could you hate running? You're awesome at it.
Right.
And so he got into it. But one of the things my relationship with him taught me, so he picked up a guitar when we were in high school, and he just taught himself by ear. He'd listen, he'd play. Okay, that sounds like that. And he just built that until he could play.
Mm-hmm.
And he's able to, like, sit down with guys who are playing music and just fit in there, and they can just jam. And he says for him, that is more, like, fulfilling than, like, getting precise and writing a great song and getting all, like, the notes down and, like, okay, I've built this thing that I can repeat over and over. It's knowing that he has enough mastery that he can handle a dynamic situation and let these surprises fulfill him and bring him, like, gratification, that the work is flexible to the need.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's powerful. If that isn't building capacity,
yeah,
right? It's like, and that is, to me, the initial thing that I first realized of running is, like, my energy levels when they got big. I mean, how much better am I at playing with my kids, at, like, doing the chores that, like, makes my wife feel like I'm pulling my weight around the house, right?
Right.
Like, showing up at work, like, you know, shoot, I know people who would be exhausted by an hour-long conversation. Like, I feel like I'm brimming, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's the other part of it too, is like your clarity in your present moments will be enhanced because you don't have this fog that is just like, maybe it's a bad diet, maybe it's the hangovers, maybe it's just like I didn't sleep well. Mm-hmm. Like if you can hammer out this one thing, like I know for a fact that being in great cardiovascular condition makes you more intelligent. And I know that because of what I said, intelligence is just the ability to solve problems. Mm-hmm. And energy and presence will always be mighty factors in that ability. So it's just a great starting point, yeah. Man. And I know that the walk-on mentality is about like, it's a bigger scope, like about seeing what you, like, have you heard of this quote? I forget the philosopher's first name, but Thurman. He was like a maybe African-American studies professor. Mm-hmm. Don't quote me on that. But his quote is, don't ask what the world needs you to do. Ask what makes you come alive and do that, because what the world needs is people who come alive.
Yeah.
And I feel like because the walk-on mentality is first about removing limitations, it is an invitation to live a bigger, more engaging life. Arms. And a belief that you can do that. And I like that it has an initial focus on health and fitness because of the things I just said about raising the energy floor, mm-hmm. so that you are ready for the dynamism that this bigger life is offering you. And so those are all the things that I was just like, man, that's what I'm trying to say.
And the beauty of it is it's available to all of us.
Yeah.
It's available right to all of us.
I would say it's not even something to be taught, right? It's like, it's just something to be discovered. It is as natural an element as the wind and fire. It's just like, once you understand what it's for, you can harness it into whatever endeavor you wish to pursue.
Yes, absolutely.
So
what are you training for now?
Dude, you have caught me at a interesting time in life.
Are you in between blocks?
Well, unfortunately, yes, but I'm 7 days out of the hospital, 8 days.
Oh my gosh.
I just got diagnosed with an adrenal insufficiency.
Okay.
I could not figure out for the last few months, like I couldn't, I watched my VO2 max just dropping month after month and I couldn't fix it. Mm-hmm. And finally my body broke down, go to the hospital. I'm there for 6 nights. They solve everything. Apparently my potassium levels were like 8.4, which should have been like urine cardiac arrest.
Wow.
But because of all the training, like my heart could handle the throughput.
Wow.
And so like they got my levels back in to shape, and you know, like old people that have the pill box, like Monday through Sunday.
Yeah.
I'm now a member. I got one pill in my box every day. I'll take that because my body doesn't produce enough cortisol.
Okay.
So
interesting.
So now I'm on hydrocortisone, and this is all within like, I'm like 1 week into this.
Well, I'm glad you're sitting here.
So my focus right now, 30 days of consistency. Mm-hmm. This is day 7. I got up this morning, did 30 minutes on the Peloton, just zone 2.
Yep.
And then when I get back to my brother's house, I'll do this little strength training session, some deadlifts, just keep it light, let my body find itself again. And at the end of 30 days, I'll be kind of close to the new year. And it's like, all right, what's the plan?
Yeah.
So well,
good. Take your time back. I mean, there's no rush, you know, like I know
it doesn't feel that way.
I know it doesn't feel that way. But like, you know, I think I was just talking to somebody this morning who had said, oh, man, I slept through my alarm and this and that. And I know this person's been handling a lot of stuff. And I just was like, dude, honestly, like you could beat yourself up, but like you could also take it as a sign that like maybe you needed a minute of rest. Yeah. And like rest is okay. Yeah. Rest is necessary. So I am glad that you have that handled and like have a path forward. Rock the pill box. Just own it. That's great.
Yeah, no, it's good. First time I felt like myself in like 6 months.
Wow.
It's nice.
Good, man. Good. Good. Well, you know, I always ask my guests if you had a piece of advice that you wanted to leave the audience with, what would it be?
Just because it's the one on the top of my head. Measure less, relate more. That's it. There's so much about like output that we get focused on, and like I need to be like earning X or being or performing Y. And if you can get away from like being overly invested in that future perspective, you know what it is. You know where you're going. You don't need to see the finish line to get there. Shorten the scope and just relate to what's going on around you, the people, the days you have. And if you can find the pleasure in the work that's right here, right now, what's that phrase? The man who enjoys walking will travel further than the man who enjoys the destination.
Mm-hmm.
Like you will be amazed at the uplift in your life. So worry less about it needing to be like, it's got to be this race time or I've got to lift this weight, and just enjoy the run, enjoy the lift, and the numbers will come.
Couldn't agree more.
So,
Dustin, I cannot thank you enough for joining me. This has been a joy. Is there anything that you that I missed? Anything you want to say? I mean, I know we got the book. What else? We're gonna have a discount code in the show notes.
Yeah, that's
the Walk the Mentality audience.
Yeah, just as you know, a gift of gratitude to your audience. So the book is available on Spotify. You can stream it if you're a premium user. And awesome thing that Spotify does that helps out indie authors like me. But there is a code for those of you who aren't premium subscribers. Walk on, one word. And any of your listeners get it for $4.99, which let me say.
What a deal.
It might be the best deal. Like a book for $5, like when a book really lands with you, it is somebody's time and insight and investment and like experience. And experience is, I mean, anybody who's had a good mentor knows the value. And for $5, like shoot, man, you finish a cup of coffee, forget about it.
Yeah.
Book will stick with you.
Yeah.
So
that's invaluable.
Not to get the sales hat on, but come on, guys.
Put it on, rock it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So yeah, walk on, one word, and just like thanks for having me, man. I like seriously so grateful, and it's been awesome to meet you. This is an incredible environment to do this, and this last hour has just been an amazing. I know I talked a lot.
That's what it's supposed to be, man. You've got the story, and this is meant to be exactly what it was. So
awesome. Love that perspective.
You. Yeah. And to the listeners, thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of the Walk On Mentality Podcast, and we will see you on the next one.